Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got another wonderful show in store for you with a guest in studio, and you guys know how much I love having guests in studio. So I'm going to get to him in just a moment. But first, of course, we have our quotes of the day from Mike Dooley in the Universe and from Abraham. Let's see what quotes we have in store for us today. First, from the Universe. The more one loves for no reason at all, the easier their life, the greater their friends, and the happier their times. Love rocks the Universe. Ah, we love our quotes from Mike Dooley in the Universe, reminding us that loving for no reason at all kind of really makes everything better. And I mean, you people know that, right? You, my loyal fans out there, and I see a bunch of people hopping on the Facebook live stream already. Thank you, Jonathan, Pat, Lisa, Louise. But it's something so basic, so simple, we often forget it. You know, we forget how much having a little more love, a little more compassion, first for ourselves and then for others, how much it smooths the way. It's the grease on the wheels that just makes life better for everyone. First of all, we show up better, and by us showing up better in life, people respond to us in a better way. So I know it may seem something very trite, something, oh yeah, we all know that, very obvious. But sometimes we need to be reminded of the obvious just because it is so obvious. So good quote from the Universe, just giving us that little reminder today. All right, let's see what Abraham has in store for us today. From the physical perspective, most of you believe that your beliefs are the right ones, and if you disagree with someone, they must be wrong. But from the non-physical standpoint, it is not seen as right and wrong. It seems as the powerful diversity that stimulates thought, and from the non-physical perspective, you enjoy that diversity. Abraham. Now, this quote I kind of really like a lot, because it really gets to the heart of sort of why, in some ways, like, I'm a big believer that, like, nobody has the quote unquote truth. And that, you know, we all come to things from different perspectives. We all come to things from the point of view that we're brought up in context to our society, our ethnicity, our culture. And somebody from the other side of the world may believe in something completely different from us, but it serves them. And it makes their life better. So who are we to judge that that thing is wrong? And it's one of those basic things that, like, you know, ever since I was a kid, you know, you look at all the major religions of the world, and there are some things that are wildly different about them. Yet at the core, at the heart, at the spirit that underlies all of these religions is the same core philosophy almost. But it comes to us in a different way. And, you know, it's very easy for us to judge, especially for our own culture that we come from, because we know it so well. You know, that old expression that the grass is always greener on the other side. You know, when we learn about a new philosophy, a new religion, a new culture, we think, oh, it's so much better than our own. But it just appears that way because we're on the inside, so we get to see, like, all the yucky stuff about it. But from the non-physical perspective, it's all a rich diversity. It's all different threads in this amazing tapestry that we call life and this world, and it all contributes in some fashion. Look, you don't have to agree with everything in the world. You don't have to even accept everything in the world, but we can still appreciate it for its diversity. And again, we can be free to believe however we want to believe, and they can be free to believe however they want to believe. We do not have to enforce our beliefs on every other person in the world. And indeed, if we did, and they did accept everything, and we were all exactly the same, we would probably be bored out of our minds, and it really wouldn't serve the world in any way. So, two kind of interesting quotes from the universe and from Abraham. And indeed, you know, this appreciation for the diversity of the world comes from loving the world for no other reason. So two very much aligned quotes, very beautiful quotes, and I think actually pretty apropos for who we're going to talk to today. And now it is my extreme pleasure to welcome Mark Lesser, author of the new book, The 7 Practices of a Mindful Leader, Lessons from Google and a Zen Monastery Kitchen. Ooh, I'm like really curious about the Zen Monastery Kitchen because I love food. Okay, so blending his leadership experience running a Zen Monastery Kitchen, leading mindfulness training for Google engineers, and starting and leading the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute. That sounds fascinating. Mark combines the hard-earned wisdom of a compassionate mindfulness teacher with the insights of an experienced business leader. In recent years, mindfulness has exploded in popularity, but an individual's interest in mindfulness does not necessarily translate into them becoming a mindful leader. Understanding mindfulness can be challenging. Even more difficult is embodying and regular practicing in everyday life. Grounded in depth and simplicity of his experience of leading a Zen monastery kitchen, Mark unpacks the richness of these practices and makes them accessible to our daily life. And I'm very pleased to welcome him to the Conscious Consultant Hour today. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Sam. You know, I really had to restrain myself. You may not know this about me, but I started and ran a greeting card company for 15 years.
A greeting card company?
I consider myself to be a professional quote collector, amongst other things. So
really?
I could jump on and start with a couple of quotes. How does that fit?
That would be wonderful.
Even in your theme. So one is a small piece of a poem. The poem is by a poet named Tony Hoagland, and the name of this poem is The Word.
Okay.
And a small piece of this poem is, "Do you remember that time and light are kinds of love?"
Ooh.
And love is no less particular than a coffee grinder or a safe spare tire.
Ah.
Time and light are kinds of love.
Wow. Oh, that's beautiful. Ooh, I like that.
And then I
like
could throw in, let's see, a bit of a Mary Oliver poem.
Okay.
This is what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world. This is what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world.
Now, that's a good quote for me to ask my first question, because I always like to give my audience perspective about the background of the guests who come on. So I'm really curious, like, how did you end up in a Zen monastery kitchen?
Yeah, well, it all started here on the East Coast.
Okay.
I'm a New Jersey boy.
Oh, okay.
Minding my own
I won't hold it against you, I promise.
Minding my own business. I was an undergraduate at Rutgers.
Oh, yes. I have a couple of friends who went to Rutgers.
And I started to get quite excited about exploring something beyond the conventional courses and ideas that Rutgers was offering me. And I took a one-year leave of absence, went to San Francisco, and that 1 year turned into 10 years at the San Francisco Zen Center.
Okay. Now, quick question. What were you studying at Rutgers?
I was a psychology undergrad at the time.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And like, why did you pick that particular Zen monastery?
I had been given a copy of a book called the Tassajara Bread Book, which happens to be, I think it was, and maybe still is, the world's best-selling bread book, a manual on how to bake bread.
Oh.
And it came out of this Zen monastery called Tassajara.
Ah.
And what drew me to the book and to this place was, one, very practical, how to make bread, and good. Two,
I love bread.
There was a depth of spirituality. There was a sense about that baking bread as an act of getting to know yourself and going beyond yourself.
Mm.
And three, there was a sense of humor. It had a sense of humor to it. And I thought, I like this. This has a good feeling to it. And one day I found out that Tassajara was connected to a larger group of communities called the San Francisco Zen Center. And right there, in fact, I used to take the number 6 Masonic bus to a job I had downtown San Francisco, and the bus literally to and from downtown went right by the Zen Center's headquarters in the city. It was this big brick building.
Okay.
One day I got off the bus and literally I walked in and I immediately felt like this is going to be home for a while.
Oh,
that
wow.
did it. That did it.
And how long ago was that?
That would have been about 40 years ago, a little more than 40 years ago.
Wow.
I was in my early 20s at the time.
Wow. And so that center was right in San Francisco proper?
Yeah, and I started sitting there. I moved into the neighborhood. I moved into the building. And part of the routine, part of the practice was that if you wanted to really go deep, you would go down and spend some time, a year or two, in this Zen monastery training center in the mountains in Central California called Tassajara, which also turns into a resort and conference center in the
oh, really?
Summertime.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
And somehow, one of the big surprises for me of that experience was I kept getting asked to take on different leadership roles within the Zen Center community.
Oh.
So okay. I was the baker. I was a bread baker for a year. I was then the assistant to the head cook for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was 28 years old, and I found myself being the head cook of this kitchen, which in the summertime was a lot like any other kind of commercial kitchen, in that we were serving, we had 70 or 80 overnight guests. Tassajara has a reputation for gourmet quality vegetarian food because many books have actually come out of that place and a restaurant. One of the, maybe the number one vegetarian restaurant in San Francisco is called Greens, came out of the Zen Center. And to this day is still very, very popular, great place.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. One quick question. Do you still bake your own bread?
I do.
Oh, awesome. But you didn't bring any samples. No, that's okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to start talking about why you wrote this book and what are these seven Zen practices about, okay?
Beautiful.
Wonderful, yeah. Mark. Okay, so everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, and you guys on Facebook Live know this is pre-recorded. Welcome, Luis, Denise, Shweta, Jonathan. Oh, Dennis, nice to see you. And it's not the name that I know. There. Filippo, good to see you again, too. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo! What's that?
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is Mark Lesser, author of the book, Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader. And you guys know I love mindfulness stuff. Is this your first book?
Fourth book.
Okay, what was the first book?
ZBA, Zen of Business Administration.
Oh.
Second book was called Less, Accomplishing More by Doing Less.
Ooh, I like that one.
And then third was Know Yourself, Forget Yourself.
Oh, interesting. So I'm sensing kind of a theme here of like Zen, mindfulness, and business. Given that you were in the monastery, what happened? Like, how long did you stay in the monastery? And then, like, why did business become such a big thing for you?
Yeah, we were just about there.
Yeah.
So 10 years at the Zen Center, 5 in the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
The 10th year at Zen Center, I was asked to be the director of this place called Tassajara.
That
then it became really clear that I was running a business,
despite
that I thought of myself as being a Zen student.
Right.
And a few things happened then. One was I really liked it.
Ah.
I mean, I liked running the kitchen. I liked I liked managing things, empowering people, getting shit done. I liked that. And also the other big aha that I had was these what looked like two different practices, like contemplative practice, Zen practice, mindfulness practice, and work, getting things done. Not only were they not in opposition to each other, but they're like, these go together really well.
Right.
Why isn't everybody doing this? and I thought, well, this is what I think I'm going to somehow, some crazy idea that I'm going to bring. This was, 40 years ago.
Yeah, wow, that was a while ago. That was before mindfulness was such a buzzword like it is today.
And I decided that I just had 10 years of mindfulness training. I needed some business training.
Mm.
So I went back, finished my undergraduate degree at Rutgers, and went right to NYU Business School.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I ended up, a couple years later, starting my first company, which was a greeting card company, which was one of the first companies in the world to make things out of recycled paper.
Oh, really?
We were making wrapping paper, greeting cards, and it's interesting. That was my motivation for starting the company. But I reached out to artists and writers that I knew. So we were licensing like the words of the Dalai Lama.
Oh,
and
wow.
Thich Nhat Hanh and poetry of Rumi.
Oh, really?
And putting cards and wrapping paper on recycled paper.
Wow. Is the business still around?
It's still around, called Brush Dance. Brush Dance.
Brush Dance.
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, so you started this business, so I'm assuming you took all the things you learned and you applied it to your business.
And it was very humbling, right? Mm. I found out how humbling leadership really is. Like running a company. Yeah. I mean, we went through the whole dot-com expansion in the year 2000 and 2001, and my timing was perfectly horrible for that.
horrible timing.
We raised millions of dollars and then raised a whole bunch of debt money, and the whole dot-com thing collapsed, and I learned a lot of lessons about difficulty, business near bankruptcy.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot. And after that, I started doing coaching and consulting and found myself being a executive coach to several Google engineers.
Ah, okay.
And it happened to be right at the time. So talk about now good timing on the other side of that.
Yeah.
There was a Google engineer who had the idea of developing a mindfulness and meditation program inside of Google.
Oh.
And he found out about me.
Oh.
And 'cause he was looking for who is it that has lots and lots, many, many years of meditation practice and really gets leadership and business. And he called me one day and said, hey, do you want to help me develop this program? All we have is the name. The name was a joke. It was called Search Inside Yourself, kind of riffing off Google as a search company. And over a period of several years, we kind of started testing, refining, how do you teach mindfulness, emotional intelligence, meditation inside this gigantic company filled with very smart Google engineers.
I imagine working with people who are really the cream of the crop in that capacity must have some unique challenges.
Well, yes. But I think like much of our culture, people who, for the most part, people who are cream of the crop have never had any training in things like paying attention or listening, or the whole realm of emotional skills.
Yes,
especially at Google, these were like these were the brightest of the bright out of the top computer science programs.
Right,
but
and computer scientists and many of my friends are, you guys know, like you work with the numbers, computers, programs. You're great. Work with people. That's a whole nother bowl of wax.
Yeah, and that's true for all of us. It's very humbling working with people. Leadership, management, it's not easy. But it was really exciting to work with these Google engineers and see the hunger for developing the ability to listen, the encouragement to ask questions like what's most important in your life, what really matters, and to have people have real conversations with each other. And they would come out of these programs being better leaders, able to collaborate more, greater well-being. I mean, it doesn't hurt.
I bet.
Generally,
I bet.
You know, it can shake things up, but it shakes things up in a really good way.
So the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, was that something that you kind of founded during or afterwards, like apart, or is that something founded inside of Google?
Kind of yes and yes.
Okay.
It emerged within Google, but then I helped create it as a separate nonprofit organization, separate from Google.
Okay.
Google very generously gave us the trademarks, and the intellectual property was all Google owned, but they wanted us to be a nonprofit, and that was fine with me because we were a completely mission-driven organization. And then I was the founder CEO, and I ran that organization for about 6 years. And I recently stepped out of running that organization. Is around and thriving.
Mm-hmm. All right,
so
cool.
I'm now doing very similar types of work. In fact, this new book is I do trainings and workshops around 7 practices of a mindful leader.
Here's the book. Get the book. Okay. So let's talk about it. How did you managed to distill down to just 7 practices, because there's a lot of practices, aren't there?
There are. But I really like these. And the way these practices evolved was when there was a time when we were looking at this program, Search Inside Yourself, became enormously popular. And mm-hmm. there were many more people who wanted to be part of it inside of Google than we had the people to teach.
Ah.
So we decided to train a group of Google engineers to teach the program.
Oh, okay.
And I brought in a friend of mine to help. And a whole funny story, but the short story is my friend very spontaneously came up when he was asked, what do Google engineers really need to know and embody? What are the core values if you want to be a mindfulness teacher or a mm-hmm. meditation teacher? Mm-hmm. And just spontaneously, he started teaching these 7 particular practices.
Oh.
And as soon as I heard them, I was like, these are great. And these go so far beyond just being a mindfulness teacher. I made copies of these 7 practices and put them on everyone's desk at the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute. There were about 20 employees at the time.
Uh-huh.
I started teaching about them. I started writing about them. And little by little, a book started to evolve.
And then, of
course, I had to call my friend. And said, you know, I think I need your permission in order to write a book. And my friend's response was, what 7 practices? He had no memory of it.
That's funny.
And I read them. I read him the 7 practices, and he said, those are pretty good.
Yeah.
Good luck with your book.
That's
how they emerged.
Okay, so let's we just got a few minutes before we go to break, so let's just like tick off what are the 7 practices, and then after the break we'll really get into them.
Okay. Love the work.
Love the work.
Do the work.
Do the work.
Don't be an expert.
Don't be an expert.
Connect to your pain.
Connect to your pain.
Connect to the pain of others.
Connect to the pain of others.
Depend on others.
Depend on others. Ooh.
And the last and sometimes most difficult, keep making it simpler.
Ah, okay. So let me ask you a question. Of these 7 practices, which one was most difficult for you?
Probably the last.
Yeah?
Yeah. Although, I often get asked these days to define mindfulness.
Ah.
And one way I could define mindfulness would be through the lens of these 7 practices. I think I see them as kind of a master kind of program or template for what mindfulness practice actually is many views of what mindfulness is. There's no like one definition. Mindfulness is this enormous body of work, but this works pretty well, I think, looking at it through this lens.
Right. Do you still consider, did you become I know under the Zen practice, like there are monks and teachers and stuff. Do you still consider yourself a Zen something?
I'm actually a Zen priest.
Zen priest.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I usually don't. It's funny that word has so much baggage.
Yeah.
So I generally call myself I'm a Zen teacher. I have a weekly meditation group in Mill Valley called Mill Valley Zen.
Oh.
I still am very connected to the San Francisco Zen Center.
Okay.
I study and teach Zen, and to me, you know, what I love about Zen is what it has a sense of humor.
Yes.
It's very practical. And its whole point is to deny the existence of itself.
Mm.
Zen is really just a fancy way of looking at what does it mean to be a human being?
Mm.
What is this human life? What is consciousness? And how can we most effectively serve humanity?
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful.
Call it Zen. Call it Christianity. Call it whatever you want to call it.
Right. You know, your stuff kind of reminds me in a way of a kind of a famous Buddhist teacher who kind of did the same thing, Geshe Michael Roach.
Yeah, I know him some.
You know him some in his book, The Diamond Cutter.
Yep.
I love The Diamond Cutter. I recommend it to a lot of people because I just love the way, I mean, kind of the way you take Zen practices and integrate it into business. He took Buddhist practices and integrated it into business and had tremendous success from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this sort of same way here, it's taking these practices, these mindful, even you'd say spiritual practices. And it's so funny, right, how you can take them and apply them to some very practical, grounded things, and you actually achieve more that way, don't you?
Yeah, and it's interesting seeing how the world is exploding with the integration of these practices from Mark Benioff, founder, CEO of Salesforce.
Is
a student of mindfulness. Jeff Weiner, who's the CEO of LinkedIn. Hundreds of smaller, medium-sized companies. Google has adopted mindfulness as their well-being practice.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Okay, great. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into these seven practices and what they're all about and you know how our audience can use them, okay?
Beautiful.
Awesome. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon Eastern to 1 p.m., and we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Mark Lesser, author of the book, Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader. Okay, so we ticked off the seven practices. Let's go a little more in depth with them. Love the work. What does that mean?
Yeah, so this one is a little bit not completely obvious. When people hear love the work, they immediately think, oh yeah, I've heard this before, you know, I'm supposed to love the work I'm doing. But no, that's right. Not what it is.
Okay.
This is, the work is the work of having a practice, having a mindfulness practice, having a meditation practice. It's loving the work of developing your self-awareness, the work of self-actualization. And the beauty of it is, no matter what your role is out in the world, this work can be applied in whatever that role is, whether you're a teacher or a doctor or a sweeper or whatever it
is.
So it's sort of rethinking, reframing what your career is, what your this is to me. This is the real work.
Right. As a friend of mine likes to say, this is the lifelong PhD,
Working on ourselves. Yeah, and it's a lot like, you know, it's a bit like the quotes you were reading that you opened the show with. It's around dropping in and seeing that love is at the bottom of everything. So this is the first practice, which is loving the work. And then the second practice is that it's do the work, is that you actually have to have some kind of, I break the work down into what I think of as...
Can we call it something else than work? Because, you know, work is such a charged word. I like to call it play or dance.
Actually, I almost changed it to... It could be love the practice and do the practice. So it's a...
Yeah.
But then these are all practices, so it gets a little bit...
Confusing. Yeah, anyway,
The work gets... You know, Byron Katie uses that, that word. The work. Yeah.
I just feel like people work so much, they're like, I have to do more work.
Whatever you call it.
Right. Okay. So do
practice.
So love the work.
Love the work. Do the work. Which really means to have what I call a dedicated practice and an integrated practice. Dedicated
practice.
So dedicated is something that you do outside of the stream of your life.
Okay.
So stopping and doing meditation, maybe journal writing, walking meditation, something where you're not engaged in whatever there's no doing. It's almost the opposite of doing. But integrated practice, which is equally important, is then when you get up from the cushion, it's bringing that attitude, that sense of learning into your daily, all of your life, right? There used to be, you know, many years ago, there was an expression that when you went to work, you left your soul in the parking lot.
Ah, yeah.
So this is like the opposite of that, that you, and this is still quite a challenge to bring your full humanity into whatever your work is.
Yes, yes. And it's absolutely still a challenge. There's still a lot of people in corporate situations that, you know, they feel they can't because they feel if they really, you know, lived up to what they truly believe in, that they'd get fired or something. But more and more companies are starting to shift and change because they're just realizing it's good business to be mindful.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's good to be real about that. There is a natural tension. There is some tension between taking care of people and getting stuff done.
Yes.
That it takes some skill, it takes some practice, it takes some embodiment to do that skillfully.
Yeah, yeah. I've been on a tirade the last year or so against the idea of productivity, that being productive is great for society and lousy for the individual.
Well, but let me push back a little bit on
sure.
that. So I did last winter, I went back to the monastery and did a 3-month retreat. And I thought it was a joke at first, but they put me in charge of the kitchen every afternoon. That was my job. After it was literally 35 years since I had run the Tassajara kitchen. So every afternoon, I'd come into the kitchen and the head cook would hand me the list of things that needed to get done that afternoon so that dinner could happen.
Oop.
So that dinner could happen and so that the next day's meals could all happen efficiently and effectively. You know, this was like people needed to eat.
Right.
So I had what needed to happen. And I had a crew. Gotcha. I had a crew every afternoon of, you know, maybe 5 or 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, they were chatting and playing and having a great time. I like this. This was fine. But sometimes I needed to say, hey, guys.
Yeah, we need to get something
I love you all. Yeah. I care about you. We need to get this stuff done. You need to focus. And do you need help? Can I show you how to cut these carrots more quickly? I know how to do this. There's way. So it's. I think we can't completely throw out productivity.
Right.
I mean, especially anyone who's in a leadership role or an entrepreneur or any small business person, like you got to get stuff done.
So
to me, I think it's how do you work within, and I think it's useful having the limitations of certain stuff needs to get done.
No matter,
you have to make a certain amount of money. You have to produce a certain amount of results.
Right.
So I think this can be. Healthy tension.
Modify my philosophy and say that the overemphasis on productivity doesn't serve.
Agreed. And an overt emphasis on money and success is really dangerous.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and we look at like when you really play that out, you get to see the state of what our world is in.
Absolutely.
You know, what our food production systems are. The way we deal with energy, all of that was making choices step by step by step around productivity and efficiency and money and greed with no sense at all of what's the health of our air?
Yes.
What's the health of our water?
Environment.
How about the people? Look at the way we put people in factories. So I think there's a lot to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to take a multi. You have to look at it from a variety of perspectives.
Okay. We still got five practices to go. Don't be an expert. What do you mean by that? Don't you need to be an expert? Right? Google engineers, they're experts.
Exactly. And I say I want my surgeon or my car mechanic to be expert. But what I mean, this is in relation to mindfulness practice. Into relationships in particular, into leadership. No one is going to be, you can't be an, if you, so it's about cultivating a certain attitude of beginner's mind, of curiosity, of openness, of questioning. So it's cultivating that sense as opposed to being right or that right, having it one way. Right. Again, it's you said it all at the beginning of the show. You know, the statement.
Yeah, the quotes are always so apropos.
The statement that you made about seeing things from a variety of perspectives. Right. Again, but these things are all easier said than actually done.
Right.
Especially when we are feeling stress or we're feeling.
Yes.
So this to me is why productivity and goals, they push you and they test your practice. They deepen your practice. How can you be like, I've had to terminate many, many people. And I've run four different companies now.
And
how can you do that with caring and compassion? How do you deal with difficulty? So this is why I think business is such a great cauldron for developing and cultivating one's practice.
So this kind of sounds like that old adage, you can be right or you can be happy. So when we worry less about being right, then we can be more open and we can hear more things, and then we can be happy, because if we're not the expert, then we learn more things and more things can get done.
And it's such a great practice, and you know, even in the business world, to let go of thinking, you know, what we know, right? I mean, General Motors, they were so convinced that everyone wants big cars. They happen to be, it's funny, these cycles. Suddenly everyone wants big cars again.
Yeah, it's all these SUVs.
Bizarre.
I don't know. All right, let's go to the next one. This one I love. Connect to your pain.
Well, in a way, this is, this is Buddhism 101, or I would say it's humanism 101, that the study of humanity starts with noticing discomfort, noticing the limitations and possibilities through the lens of how, as humans, we don't always get what we want. We often get what we don't want.
Right.
Things break, things fail. And then there's that our lives are limited. We will lose everyone and everything.
Yeah.
Old age, sickness, and death, if we're lucky, right? Old age, sickness, and death.
Yes.
So this is our common humanity. And again, whether it's in the realm of humanity, and also in leadership, there's a tremendous amount of evidence that the more empathy you have as a leader, the more self-awareness. And part of self-awareness is copping to that being a human being is difficult and connecting to what's difficult and your own pain. So both these practices, connecting to your pain and connecting to the pain of others,
which is the next one.
Yeah. Core, again, there's a lot of research that shows how important empathy is. Empathy is essentially caring about the people that we work with, and that the more responsibility someone takes on, the lower their empathy.
Oh.
And that this is why you need to pay attention. And because what happens is, as we take on more responsibility, we become more focused on results, focused on productivity, and less on the human element.
Aspect, right. So, because you have to accomplish this big task or this big goal.
It's a little bit like I was, saying about even me running the kitchen last year.
Right.
There was some part of me that my first reaction was, "You guys can't be playing here. I'm responsible."
Right.
And how can I help see that we're all responsible?
Right.
And how can I help see that I care about you? And maybe you need to be talking because there's something bothering you and you blah blah blah. But right now, cut the darn carrots.
Yeah. There's one thing I always like to remind people is that quote from the Dalai Lama, that there's, and I'm not going to, this isn't the quote, but the point of the quote is that there's a difference between pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. That we can connect to our pain, but we don't have to connect to suffering over the pain.
Yeah. And then there's the, the beginning, the most basic teaching of the historical Buddha, the Four Noble Truths, starts with paying attention to suffering, looking at what the cause is, which is like what the Dalai Lama was saying, and then how the way to enlightenment, the way to awakening, the way to happiness is right through what's difficult, right through our facing suffering.
Right. Now, depend on others. You were depending on others in the kitchen.
Definitely. And we're always depending on others. I mean, here we are in New York City. I mean, we depend on others for, whether it's your
every
mail
single
or
day.
Your, and the air we breathe. But in a, we live in the sea of relationships, whether it's in work or outside of work. Our identities are consciously, unconsciously molded by our core relationships, and the how others think and value things influences us, and how we think and value things influences others. So it's seeing the how profound we are in the sea of relationships.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, we've got one more. We're going to hold it until after we come back from our break. And believe it or not, this is our last break of the show. Gee, things fly when you're having fun. All right, so everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're talking this hour with Mark Lesser, author of the book, Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader. Go out, get the book. It's a good book. Buy it. Okay, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're talking this hour with Mark Lesser, author of the book, Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader. We're down to the last practice. Keep making it simpler. How do we do that?
You asked me earlier, which is my hardest one, and this I said this one.
Yep.
Because everything seems to be tilted toward complexity.
Yeah, the mind loves to complicate things, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the mind complicates things. Technology has really upped the
yes
ante.
Yes,
it's funny. I was with some people the other day who thought it was very strange that I wasn't wearing an Apple Watch. they were almost offended. And they said, okay. Don't I want to know immediately when my emails are coming in? And actually, I said, actually, no, I don't want it. I don't want to know that.
No.
And I could see they were actually a little concerned about me.
Really?
That I think the technology is shaping our attitudes about data, about speed, and about the acceptance of a kind of a complexity.
Yeah. I talk about it sometimes, but I really try and practice turning off and unplugging a lot.
Yeah.
I do some shamanic work and we do ceremonies on the weekend. And when we're in ceremony, the phone is off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I tell people all the time, I go, look, I'm not answering emails on the weekend.
Yeah.
If you send me an email on Friday, you're probably not getting an answer until Monday or Tuesday.
I mean, one of the things that I find quite a bit is in the executives who I work with as a coach or as a consultant, is people have trouble literally turning it off when they get from work to home.
Yeah.
And that turning it off is sometimes electronics, but it's also mental.
Oh, absolutely.
Mental chat.
So
people come home and they're unable to be with their families or unable to just relax.
Yeah, yeah, I did a whole show about boundaries and the importance of having boundaries. And one of the things that I talked about during that show was the most important boundaries are the boundaries we have with ourselves.
Right.
And it's like setting up that boundary of like when I'm at work, I'm at work and I'm doing work. And when I'm at home, I'm home and I'm not doing work.
Right, right.
And I learned that lesson relatively early on being an entrepreneur when I, not my first business, but in the middle there, when it was the first time that I started working from home. Mm-hmm. And that was really difficult. And I had to set boundaries for myself, because when you work from home, it's so easy to get distracted.
Yeah.
So it's, you have to set the boundary of like, this is work time, so I work. And then I have to set the, and then setting the boundary of, well, I'm not working, so it's not work.
So yes, this is one of many ways to keep making it. So one is to, if you want to make it simpler, have clear boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Other practices are to also be aware that our culture has almost this religion around busyness.
Mm, yes.
And that somehow it's not okay to smell the roses, to relax, to not value the sunshine. Last night, incredible full moon here, in the city. So just to enjoy it, We take these miracles like the full moon for granted. Mm-hmm. We take the miracles of the leaves on the trees, or even our own breath. Mm-hmm. So part of meditation practice for me is the practice of simplifying by with every breath experiencing the breath, experiencing the simplicity of I'm here, I'm alive. There's nothing complicated about this. It's amazing, right? I think our bodies are great teachers.
Yes.
Our bodies are...
And nature. Yeah.
Our bodies and nature are complex beyond what we can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they're not complicated in the way we're complicated. Our bodies are always in the present time is one fact, right?
So
how can... We human beings are rarely in the present time.
Yes.
We are mostly... worrying about the future, ruminating about the past.
Yeah.
So part of, again, these practices are around boundaries, are around being in the present time.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I one of the things that I talk about in the book is cultivating spaciousness as a practice.
Oh.
So much of problems and stress, so are pushing away problems and feeling stressed or feeling tight or feeling like too much to do and not enough time. An antidote to that is just to recognize, like this right here in your studio, look at the space here.
Yeah.
And just to open to actually not only just see it, but kind of feel the level of spaciousness that's here, maybe right in the midst of having this conversation, right in the midst of maybe, doing something that has some stress to it.
What role does having compassion for ourselves play in all of this? Because we're rather fallible human beings, and as hard as we try, we're not going to follow all these practices all the time.
Yeah. So a good place to start is to recognize the conscious and unconscious habits that most of us have about not being compassionate with ourselves.
Mm.
The inner critic and the ability to judge ourselves and others is part of our DNA. It's part of our evolutionary biology. It's like one of my Google scientist friends is very fond of saying, we are descendants of the nervous apes, right? The apes that were chill, that were calm, they all got killed. The ones that were scanning for threats, those are the ones that excelled and survived. And part of scanning for threats is the opposite of self-compassion.
Mm.
So we now live in this age where we need to be very conscious about noticing, really getting in there and noticing our own ways that we are hard on ourselves, that we judge ourselves. Mm. It starts with noticing it and then practicing trying a different way.
Right.
Breaking a lot of people, most everyone in our society, here in the States especially, they have the unconscious belief that we need to be hard on ourselves to get stuff done.
Right.
If we were kind to ourselves, we'd be lazy. Nothing would happen. My advice is try it.
Yes.
See for a week. Try for a week. Instead of being hard on yourself, be kind to yourself.
Yes.
see how that impacts your productivity.
Right.
I do that a lot with people, and people come back and say, "What a surprise!
Yeah,
I'm actually more creative. Productive. I'm more productive. Right. I feel better about things."
Right.
You know, the tighter we are, the dumber we are.
Right. Right, because we're not able to really access that innate wisdom and creativity because we don't give it space.
Totally. It takes space in our bodies and our psyches to be more creative and to ask those questions about what really matters, whether it's in my human world, in my heart, or in my business. Like what's reality here? How am I serving my customers?
Right.
How is the environment changing?
Right.
What do I need to be paying attention to?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, you know, I think I must have been descended from one of those apes that was pretty chill and somehow still made it. My wife was descended from one of those apes that was really nervous because she's hyper vigilant about her environment.
So, yeah.
We both make it. How have you seen people shift from being exposed to these seven practices?
Well, I think these seven practices, and there's something happening in our world right now. There's a giant shift happening.
Yeah.
Despite what you might read in the newspaper.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There is more and more interest and need in developing consciousness, and particularly conscious business. There's, I think, an understanding of how much business has mucked up the world.
Yeah.
And the possibility that through leadership, business, work, that can have a core role in making the world a little bit better place.
Yes, wonderful. All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much. Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader. Please pick it up. It's a great book. Let me ask you, who is this book written for?
Everyone.
Everyone. Good. That's a good audience.
Because everyone's a leader.
Yes, in some fashion, whether you're a leader in your family, in your community.
Leadership is about influence. We all have influence.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If people want to learn more about you personally, get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Mark Lesser, MarkLesser.net.
.net. Yeah. Ah, okay. Mark Lesser.
Some other Mark Lesser, I think, took the .com.
So. Nerve of that fellow. We got to find him and shoot him. No. We got to be mindful. All right. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much. And next time you come, I want some fresh bread.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you. You're welcome. And thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in and listening. As always, you know, this show, without you, this show doesn't exist. So I really appreciate you all tuning in, whether it's on talkradio.nyc or on the Facebook Live. Please do us a favor. If you enjoyed this interview, enjoy the shows, don't keep them a secret. Share them. Get the word out there. Don't keep us the best kept secret in New York City. We really want more people to know about it. So please share. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Yeah. You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.